And all we lost was the horses. But it could have been a pretty bad smash, that.
Did it kill the horses?
The horses were both killed, yes.
I think I know where that place is.
Suicide bandits. I forget, we had a name for that. I forget it now. It's a long time ago. I just bought that leap. That pair of leap was about 2 weeks before that. With a pair of little horses. Well, that was 1915. I got married in 1915. A girl I met in Juneau. She was a Dawson girl, granddaughter of an old Dawson pioneer, Terence McManus. She died in a diphtheria epidemic in 1918, left me a daughter 2 years of age, and that kind of set me back quite a little bit. Business didn't seem so fascinating for a while. The 1916, the war was going on all this time, but we were exhorted to be neutral in thought, and I didn't follow some of my countrymen and go back to the old country, as I perhaps should have done. I stayed, and I got engaged in the fishing business. At that time, the fishing business around Juneau was just building up. People could locate traps, and it was going great guns, so I naturally had to get the fishing business. And in 1918, the United States got into the war, and there was a lot of Food Administration regulations put out, and like some government regulations are not thought right through, and I, with a lot of other fish people, got broke. They have a picturesque figure of speech in the fish business about that, and they just call it the went down the gut chute. That's the way you say you've been broke, you've gone broke.
Now, Mr. Humphreys, you being in the plumbing business there, you should remember quite a few characters and early day names that might be brought back to us.
Do you remember Harry Steele and Cordova?
Oh, I remember Harry Steele, yes. But
and the newspaper thing.
He was in the 1920s with Steele. Mm-hmm.
Did you know Cal Townsend when he was a young fella down there from 1903 to 1919?
Who?
Calvin Townsend.
Cal Townsend?
He was a long time later with the government here, but he lived around Valdez up till the time of the First World War.
No, I didn't remember him.
I've got 145 pictures, set of pictures of his taken around in those years. You might recognize a lot of them.
In Valdez, that time that I was there, there was Oklahoma Bill Hempel. He had the biggest store in town. And Meyer Blum had a store, and Diamond had a store. And Oklahoma Bill Hempel, he was the biggest merchant in Valdez, and 10 years later I met him somewhere and he was peddling raincoats. I met him on the streets of Seattle, and I shook hands with him. I says, how do you do? And you know, he was supposed to be quite sensitive about it. He says, I'm broke now. He told me right quick that he'd been the leading merchant and was broke. Well, it didn't make that much difference to me.
Well, you must have been there when Bunnell was in Valdez.
Who?
Bunnell. That was afterwards here. Judge Bunnell.
At the college? Wasn't Bunnell at the college?
At the college.
Afterwards.
Yeah, he was in Valdez first.
I didn't know too many people in Valdez because I just went in there to get... There was one winter there, I bought an outfit. The winter that we worked on the Chittenden cutoff, I went in there with two Oklahoma boys and we bought an outfit at Valdez. You went into Valdez for outfits, saying there was no other place to get it.
That's right. That's
you went in there and... And you know, we bought three horses from the Geological Survey. I think we paid $5 for one and $7 for two others. There was no pack saddles. We didn't have anything but halters. Well, between Chittenden and Valdez, we found pack saddles and we found harness. All this stuff had been discarded by people that had come into the interior and had discarded their outfits, you see. Right in on the low river there, we found...
Just walk away and meet it.
Yes, and double-ender sleds. We had a complete outfit by the time we got to Valdez. And we hauled this stuff in to where, you know. We hauled this stuff over the summit. We had to pack it over the summit. For some reason or other, we used pack saddles to go over the summit and pile the stuff on the top and then went back and got another. We relayed it.
Yeah, you were on Juneau 1918.
Well, I went through various stages in the fish business. I had two boats and a scow, and I bought fish and salted them, shipped them to Seattle. And the next year, I went up the Taku River with a man called Bill Strong. We had three flat boats. He'd come up from the Stickeen and was looking for a new location. And he asked me to go in with him, so I went in with him. And we had three boats with Scripps engines in them. We used one, the big boat, for a scow. Two little boats we used for running around. And we had 2,000 fathoms of gill net. We built three fish weavers right up the river. The river fishing was permitted at that time, it was legal. We caught this fish and run it to the cannery in Juneau. And that was the last year that fishing was permitted in the rivers. It was curtailed the next year. But for the next year, instead of trying to catch river fish, I went trolling. And trolling is quite hard work, but it's sport also. I had a little boat to call the Emerald, and you could put out two and two, four. You put out seven or eight lines at one time, and it's really, really quite a sport, as well as a way of making a living. You just chug along 2 or 3 miles an hour, and when you get a bite on one of your lines, you have to haul it in by hand and pull the poor fish into your boat and dispose of them and put your line out again. It's very nice, especially if the sun's shining.
What year did you come on up to Fairbanks?
Well, I came to Fairbanks in 1939.
39?
Yeah, I went outside one winter. And when I was in Anacortes, I encountered a man called Bill Gilkey. He's an old Dawson. An old Dawson miner. He'd worked number one Eldorado on a lay from Skip Mitchell. And he knew I'd been in Alaska. He said, why don't you come out with me this spring? So, okay. So, I took my little daughter. I'd kept my daughter with me all this time. I took her out to Anchorage and left her with her grandmother for the summer. And I met Billy Cordova, and we went into the Middle Fork together. We went up the railroad to Chittenaw, got a ride out in the car as far as Golconda. From Golconda it was on foot. Bill had some supplies taken out to the Middle Fork by Harry Cleveland of the Middle Fork Mining Company. But everything I had to pack on my back. I think I had 81 pounds when I stepped out, including my rifle for bedding and a few things I needed. I packed this right in from Golconda to Middle Fork. It took us 3 or 4 days. But I was young and stout. Bill was 63. He was a good man too. He was 25 years older than I was at the time. And we prospected. He showed me how to prospect. He showed me a little how to prospect. I mean, it was hard work. We just went from creek to creek and dug and panned and there was no fooling around sitting in camp. We just took a piece of hardtack and went out every morning. And in the fall, he stayed there to help Harry Cleveland clean up, and I came back to town because I had to get hold of my daughter. I couldn't leave her little grandmother all the time, abandoned her. And so I went into... I left him in there, and I walked out through Slate Creek across the hills, and I came out into Fairbanks Trail, somewhere above Paxson's there. I went right across country. There was an old trail like the Charlie Kramer from Slate Creek had given me a few pointers as to what landmarks to look for, and I got there and got to Paxson's in the evening and made it into Chittenaw on foot. Then I took the train and picked up my daughter and came back to Cordova. We located some ground, but we didn't make any money, of course. It was all expense. There was nothing coming in. So I was broke when I got to Cordova. I got my daughter, brought her to Cordova, went to the northern town, set out and looked for another job.
What year was that?
This was in 1922. I went over and saw the railroad. I borrowed $100 from Ira Suffland. By this time, Ira Suffland had settled down, and he was a railroad dispatcher in Cordova. I don't know whether he spoke a kind word to me or not, but anyhow, I got a job without any trouble. Perhaps he was on my shape. And he's on an extra gang in the railroad yard. And what the extra gang was doing was organizing scrap. And there was quite a gang there. One of the men in the gang with me was a sea captain with unlimited papers. He'd got aground somehow. I don't know whether he'd lost his ship or not, but he was a man. I thought he was quite old, 2 years 53 or 54, but he had humor and could laugh at himself a little bit. He was a Swede, and we used to kind of kid back and forth about the high class job we had, but he was paying the hotel bill anyhow, and paying the board bill. And one evening I was walking around Cordova, and Bert Needing, mining engineer from that known in Juneau, he was a superintendent at Kensington then, he said hello, what are you doing? Well, I said, you're working over the railroad, right? He said, why don't you come to work for me? Well, why not? So. The next morning I went up to Kennicott and put me to work there. assistant in the store, assistant postmaster. And well, the penny got most of the time until it closed after that. I was in and out two or three times, but always went back. And it was a sort of a benevolent despotism. Very nice place to be, very civilized. I lived a civilized life there, very nice people, but you had to conform. There was no room for dissension. If the manager made a ruling, that was what happened.
You must know
the young gentleman down there was at Kennicott the same year I was, in 1911. That was the first time I made a trip to Kennicott.
You must have known Cappy Osborne, yes.
When I got there, when we first saw Kennicott, Emery was the superintendent, Henry Watkins was the bookkeeper.
I think it was Higgery, first one.
In my notes I've got Emery as the superintendent, perhaps I was wrong, but it was simply from memory afterwards. And Bill Deo was the checker there. Bill Deo came back in 1923 or 1924 and worked for me in the store. And he died there, and I wound up his estate.
You must know.
Oh, I don't know what to talk about then.
Well, do you remember where you left off? You were in someplace in Copper River. You hadn't got Fairbanks yet, I don't think.
No, I didn't get to Fairbanks until 1939.
You were working where did you go from, are you working in Kennicott?
Well, I first came to Cordova in 1910, I worked on the railroad there for some time. I worked on the Alaska Road Commission on the trail. I worked on the boats in the Copper River, putting freight through to railhead. I think I stopped this last time about the time I went to Kennicott in 1911.
Yeah.
I went up there with a man called Victor Johnson, Swede. I went to work in the mine as a helper behind the miner, whose name was Johnson. And I didn't stay there very long. It was one of these, what we call in the government service, RIFs. It was shortening up the crew. So I got sent down to the main camp again, and they discovered that I could write legibly and figure a little bit, so I went to work in the store. The storekeeper's name was Moore, I think. And he put me to work figuring invoices, pricing them and whatnot. That is interposed with hard labor. I was handling nails and freight and one thing another at the same time, but in the spare time I was figuring invoices. I still found some of those invoices 11 years later when I went back as a storekeeper.
Was Cappy Osborne there at the time?
Cappy Osborne wasn't there, no. The only man was Jim Dennis, was there, the tramway foreman. He was quite a character, quite a famous character in the Copper River too. One of the most entertaining men I ever met in my life. And Dusty Rhodes was the electrician. Carl Engstrom, he was a master mechanic. Dr. Bunch was there. I
can't recall any other names right now.
When did Dr. Gillespie, he wasn't there?
Dr. Gillespie went there sometime between my first trip there in 1911 and my second in 1922. I think he'd been there about 3 years when I got back in 1922. He, the young doctor, came from the Roosevelt Hospital in New York City, I think. There was nobody there in 1922 that I remember from 1911, absolutely nobody. About this time I got an aching tooth and had to go down to Chigno to get it fixed. So myself and another man, we walked from Kennicott to Chigno, camped on the wayside, and I got my tooth fixed by a dentist there. He had an old rusty drill, pedal drill, and he had to borrow two bits from it to buy alcohol to swab out the tooth. It was kind of rough dentistry, and he put in a filling, which didn't last, by the way. It gave me lots of trouble later. And from there, I don't know. Oh, I think I stayed in Chitno that winter with the same Vic Johnson I'd gone to the mine with, and another man. We had a cabin by the lakeside, and I think our expenditure for grub was about two bits a day each. That's about all the money we had. And there was lots of rabbits, and free wood if you'd go and cut it. We stuck the winter out that way along the lakeside, and in the springtime I was hired out again by the Alaska Road Commission.
What lake was that?
That lake in which Chitno is located around.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. There was no regulations at all. You could build a cabin where there was an empty spot. But there was a cabin already built that we occupied. When I was first in Chitno, I saw the first log cabin there, but by that time there was an hotel. Oscar Breedman had built an hotel, and the Nelson brothers had a feed. They had a feed warehouse. That's O.A. Nelson and his brother. O.A. Nelson was an engineer on the railroad, and he decided to stay in Chitno, and he stayed in Chitno almost to the very end of it.
Does it get as cold down in Chitno as it does up here?
Mm-hmm. It gets quite cold, 30 below something. It's been more unpleasant at 30 below in Chitno or 45 below than it is here. Much colder. It's always a little damp. I think I went back to the Road Commission that next spring. I did, in fact. I went back to the Road Commission with Lars Holland. And we started out in the middle of March, camping out, and rushed into Gulkana. We put in the pier in the middle of the Gulkana River there for a timber bridge. And we moved on to Miller's, we put in a bridge at Miller's. And we moved on to the summit and put in some bridges. And we moved up to Jarvis Creek and put the first bridge across Jarvis Creek. And I quit sometime in the fall there and walked into Valdez with a young soldier that was working there, and he quit too and went into Valdez with me. And when I got my check, I went over to judo. And I found judo a very, very good place to be. There was lots of excitement for the new mining beds in the Alaska gold mines. Bart Thane was the head of it. And I had no difficulty in getting hold of a job. I got a job as a mine accountant at the Perseverance Mine. And I believe I recall this in the last occasion. And every time I turned around, they gave me a raise. So I thought it was a pretty fine place. I got 3 raises in about 2 months. But they had some difficulty in getting any kind of accountants. There wasn't very many people in the eternity at that time that had specialists of any kind. I stayed with them for a year and took over their freighting and contracting. That, I believe, is a repetition of my last week's talk too. But there were some extraordinary fine people in judo. Characters that should be recorded. Emery Ballantyne, the mayor, I remember. He had a wooden leg and a very strong character, but he made a very good mayor, a jeweler. Called Judge Jennings is a very fine character. I believe Judge Jennings was the man that made the citizenship papers there. Judge Wynn. I met quite a number of people there that created Alaska's history, like Governor Strong, and Governor Troy, and Charlie Davidson. Seltzer, I met him once there.
You know Goldstein?
Oh, I knew Charlie Goldstein quite well.
Do you know my father now?
No, sir.
Judge Reed?
Yeah, I remember reading about him. I think he was at Nome at the time, wasn't he?
No, he was in Juneau.
He was in Juneau
about 1920.
In 1920 is about the time I quit there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This man, Hyder, that the town of Hyder was called. I remember him. He was our geologist at the Alaska Gold. I also met an engineer that his name appears on lots of these maps. Is it Raab or something? R-A-A-B is an engineer of that name.
Who was the head of the manager of the mine there then?
Bart Thane. He was the man that promoted the whole business and got it going.
Did you know Alexander Smith?
No, I didn't.
Maybe.
I knew Sugar Bowl, right? A very famous character.
Scotty Smith.
Did they have regular boat service?
They had
published boat service.
And boat service, there was boats coming into Juneau every day. There was the Western boats all call there. Then they had boats that just went to Skagway. There was the Alaska Steamship. There was the Admiral Line. The Canadian Pacific. The odd boat. Now and then there was some other line. I forget the name of it. But there's boats there almost every day. And everybody went down to the dock that could to meet them. And about 19, I got married in 1915, my wife died in 1918, at that time I was very interested in the fishing business, navigation of the Taku River. I went into the partnership in about 1918 with a man called Bill Strong and the navigation of the Taku River. And we had three boats, we carried passengers, but our chief business was to get fish for the canneries in Douglas. We had 2,000 fathoms of gill net, three fish wheels that were built there on the bars. We took all the materials with us and just built them on the locations. And we had 2,000 fathoms of gill net. And he and I, and the hired man, Paddy Morrissey, who, by the way, was a famous character just about that time in the territory.
Famous for what?
He was a famous ex-pugilist. He's the most interesting character that had worked on both wooden ships and iron ships in the American Navy and the English Navy. He deserted from the English Navy and joined the American Navy. And at that time he was about 65 and he wouldn't take back talk from anybody. He was quite a character. Well, we fished all day and ran the boat all night. Worked like dogs, came out broke. and I'd sent my daughter out to friends in Seattle.